I wanted to give you a sense before we enter Mizmor Samach, which is the 60th Psalm. And I find it very useful sometimes to have visuals, to give you a sense of what Am Yisrael was facing in the days of Shaul and David, what David's great accomplishments were. So first screen that I want to show you is the map of Israel during the days of Yehoshua, and it is not substantially different from what it looked like in the days of Shaul. And you will see that the tribe of Dan has a small, small territory up here at the very north. And then you've got Naphtali, Asher, Zvulun, Yisachar. So they frankly don't have any exits to the sea. They're completely landlocked. Reuven, Gad, and Menashe asked to remain on the other side of the Jordan because they had a lot of flocks, you will remember. And they lived on this side in what today is Transjordan. Not all of Transjordan. Menashe was given a section of territory here and on this side of the Jordan once they crossed the Jordan River. Now, underneath Menashe is Ephraim. There is the tribe of Binyamin, and here is Yehuda. So Jerusalem was still not ours at this time. And here was Shimon. So I want you to understand that down here we would have Beer Sheva, all the way down, of course, to Eilat and so on. So the entire Negev was not under control, nor is the entire coastline. So what we would know today as Tel Aviv, Ashkelon, Ashdod, never mind Gaza down here, none of it was ours. This territory was controlled by the Plishtim. The Plishtim are not indigenous people. They are people that came from the islands, the Greek Isles, and they had needed room to expand. So they settled across the coastline of Lebanon and came down and settled over here as well. Well, now I have for you here a map of David's battles for you to understand where our threats were. Now, you just saw where they were settled, right? And you're seeing here Yerushalayim, right here smack in the dam. One of the great victories of David was to actually buy. They bought off Yerushalayim from the Yebusim. They paid full price for it in the same way that Yaakov Avinu paid for Shechem. You understand? And the way Abraham Avinu paid for Hebron. They bought it. Like Keren Kayemet Li Israel, when they bought lands in order to settle Jews on it. Nobody went and stole it from anybody. We paid full price for it and then some. Now what happens is, on this side, remember where we had Reuven, Menashe, Gad, and Menashe? South of that were Ammonim, Moabim, Edomim, and down here in the Negev, we have raiders called Amalekites. They don't have cities. They are like Bedouin wandering tribes that live by raiding other people and stealing their food, stealing their crops, stealing their men and women, which they sell into slavery. You will remember that when Yosef was sold by his brothers, there were Midianim and Medanim and Yishmaelim, and they came down with a caravan going from the north down to Egypt, and among the goods that they brought were slaves. Now, how do you get slaves? The men are out working the fields. You go and steal them. And this was done here, and it was done in Africa, and it was done in a lot of other places, you understand? Here are what we call the Philistines. This is their territory. And they have five major city-states: Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gat, Ekron. Because what they would do, the Philistines, is that the Philistines lived on the coastline, but the territory over here was farmland. And there were occasions between the days of Joshua and the days of David in which the Philistines actually controlled this and turned the Jews, the Hebrews, if you like, into their serfs. They had to give them a portion of their crops, and they could keep enough for subsistence level. You saw that we conquered some land, but we weren't always completely sovereign in that area. In addition, the Aramim, who lived in Syria, attacked certain areas of the north, Naphtali, Menashe, and they came down here raiding these territories, wishing to establish sovereignty and demanding that the Hebrews that lived there become their serfs. And we also had raids by the Ammonim, who tried to take over some of this territory. So what David is trying to do all the time, please notice the way this is, to kick them out of our area. Just kick them out. He turned out to be very successful. His entire career, 40 years as king, and frankly, a good 10, 20 years prior as a vassal and then as the son-in-law of Shaul, was to serve in the army, and in the army to save the Jewish farmers, the Jewish herders, from raids by the peoples that they were surrounded by. So now I've got the map of the 12 tribes under David's reign. Please notice what happened. They went down and spread the area of Yehudah and Shimon all the way to the coastline. So they have now full control all the way to the river of Egypt. He actually managed to raid all the way down to Eilat, but didn't actually settle the area. That occurred in the days of Shlomo. Reuven now is not different from what he had earlier. The only difference is that they managed to neutralize the threat of Ammon and Moab, and Edom was left as it is. Why? Because there was a covenant that this is the land given to the people of Edom, who are the descendants of Asa, and we don't touch their area, nor do we touch the area of Moab. Why do we touch the area of Ammon? Because Ammon had already been conquered by Sihon. We never took it from them. We took it, it had already been taken a long time ago. This is Gad all the way up here to Menashe. Now what happened to Menashe's territory is that it was spread all the way up north to the Bashan. Naphtali now has a secure area. Asher has been put on the coastline where he was supposed to be. He is settled in here is Har Carmel. This is the area of Haifa. And it goes all the way, including Tyre, Tzol, under our control. And we took control of this entire area, which Chazal called Surya, and which we know as the Golan Heights, and then some. He actually went to battle all the way to Damascus. Not because he intended to settle it, but he had to create here a demilitarized zone, prevent the Ammonim from their perpetual raids against us. Not only the Ammonim, the Aramim. Aramim are Aramaic-speaking people, and what was known then as Aram, Naharaim, is Aram that's between the two rivers, the rivers of the Tigris and the river of Euphrates. Aram Naharaim and Aram Tzoba, and they conquered that area. Who lived in this area originally? None other than Lavan. Lavan Ha'arami. These are people that are ethnically related to us, but unfortunately so are the Ishmaelim and so are the Edomites. And yet what they did was they wanted to conquer us, and David managed to push them off. This was a great achievement. So this is Greater Israel. It becomes bigger yet in the days of Shlomo, because Shlomo manages to open up the border all the way down to the Red Sea. So we now not only have access to the Mediterranean, but we also have access to trade with Africa and Arab countries. You understand? That's why you hear the story about the Queen of Sheba. You will recall that Hashem had promised Abraham Avinu that all of Eretz Israel would belong to us, min Nahar Prat, from the Euphrates River all the way to Nahar Mitzrayim, to the river of Egypt. Now you're understanding why you're going to see some of these names as they appear in your Mizmor. Lamnatzeach al Shushan Eidut, Michtam leDavid leLamed. We have here a very different type of opening. We do hear about Shushan and Shoshanim in other places. And what we have here is, according to Chazal, a testimony regarding Shushan. Shushan, according to some, is a brief way, this is Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, of saying the rose. Kishoshana bein achochim, the rose among the thorns, and is a term used to describe, as it is in Shir HaShirim, Am Yisrael. It is a testimony regarding the rose, and it is also a lelamed, to teach, something I need to teach future generations. You will soon see that the teaching is not only the actual poem, which now is appropriate for future generations, but also to teach them the Eidut. And the Eidut is a testimony. There had been a covenant with Aram that you will remember when Yaakov Avinu took his family and snuck off like thieves in the night to go back to his homeland. Because Yaakov understood the nature of his father-in-law. He knew that his father-in-law was not beyond actually killing him and keeping the daughters and the children as if they were his. Remember that it was Lavan who says, Habanot benotai, Habanim banai, the son, your daughters are mine, your sons are mine. And you'll remember that Rachel and Leah themselves said that their father treated them as slaves. He sent them out to work, and he saw his daughters as chattel that he could use and abuse when he wanted to. Well, when he ran after him, he caught up with him in a place that we know today as a place called Gilad. It is in the territory of Menashe. When he caught up with him, before he made it, God appeared at night to Laban and warned him not to harm Yaakov. When it was all over, Laban decided that they were going to part ways at peace. And he tells him, V'ata lecha nichreta brit, ani v'ata, v'haya le'ed b'ni u'v'necha. I want us to make a covenant between you and me, and let's create a monument, a testimony, something that will indicate that there was a covenant between the two of them. So, Vayikach Yaakov Eben, Yaakov took a stone, V'yirimeha Matzava, and he brought it up and built it up as a monument. In modern archaeology, this is called a stele, S-T-E-L-E. You have the stone standing up. Vayomer Yaakov le'echav. He turned to his brothers. He means his brothers-in-law. Liktu avanim, collect stones. Veikhu avanim, vayasu gal. And they made a pile of stones around the stele. Vayochlu sham al hagal. And there they ate. You break bread together on top of this pile of stones. Vayikra lo Lavan. And Lavan called the stones in Aramaic. Yigal sahaduta. I am afraid of him on high. The fear of God. Vayakov kara lo gal ed. And Yaakov gave it a name, Gal-ed, which means a pile as a testimony. You see, monuments were set up to remind you of major events. So they had a covenant. You don't come into my territory. I don't go into your territory. We sign a non-aggression pact. And we make a line. And the territory is Galed. This is our border. You go further south from here. I go further north from here. We don't cross this line. Now, I just told you that David went and attacked the north and extended Manasseh further on, more than it had been previously, way beyond the territory of Gilad. Ostensibly, against the covenant that had been made by Yaakov. How could he do so? Messages were sent to the Sanhedrin. That's why Rashi tells us the Shushan, the rose, is not Am Yisrael. He says it is a symbol of the Sanhedrin. The multi-petaled rose became the symbol. Just like the eagle is the symbol of the United States of America, the rose was the symbol of the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin gave permission to attack Aram. On what basis? That the covenant between Aram and Israel had long since been violated in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu by none other than Aram. How do I know this? Here are the words of Bilam. You remember good old Bilam, whose donkey spoke? Bilam, the prophet who wanted to curse on Israel and who later on aided and abetted the Midianim, right, and the others to attack Israel. When he finally wanted to speak, he could only speak with words that came out of his mouth. And there he said as follows, Min aham yancheini Balak melech Moab. Balak melech Moab led me from Aram. Bilam was an Arami. Meharere kedem, from the mountains of the east. And he told me, Lecha arali Yaakov, go curse Jacob for me, Ulecha Zoama Israel, and bring up rage and anger against Israel. Given the fact that they had already attempted to attack and joined together with Moab and joined together with Midian and joined together in the days of David in an alliance with the Plishtim to try to eradicate and kick the Jews out of their land, this is long since, that non-aggression pact is long since null and void. And that was the Eidut. What then is a Michtam? A Michtam, Rashi and others will tell you, is a jewel. And they say that it comes from the word Ketem. Ketem is one of the multiple words in the Torah for gold. Zahav, Paz, Ketem. Why? Because gold comes in various shades of color. There's rose gold, white gold, yellow gold, right? Michtam, and therefore a mi is from the gold. Why gold? To say that this mizmor is not only a testimony, but it is a dut michtam. The word adi also means a piece of jewelry. Why is a piece of jewelry related to the word testimony? Because a piece of jewelry indicates, is a testimony that I am married, that somebody loved me, that somebody thought of me and gave me something. It is a memento. It has meaning. And so this entire mizmor, according to Rashi, is a cherished, valuable edut, a jewel of a poem to be taught. What needs to be taught is that they attacked us first. And by attacking us first, all bets are off. We can do what we need to do to protect ourselves, including conquer land. So that's your answer to, quote, occupy territory in 1967, in 1948, in 1973, and so on and so forth. That's your michtam. It couldn't have been more timely. Others tell us that the word michtam, similar to the word michtav, which is writing, but it is in Aramaic a chiseled writing on a steel, like you would carve on a monument, to remind us of the steel of the Gal'ed that was set up by Lavan and Yaakov, but which, of course, the Aramim violated. And what then happened? This was the song that David composed. Behatzoto et Aram Naharaim. Hatzoto lehatzit means to inflame, it means to ignite, and it means he went to war. It went to battle. A flaming battle went on there. Not so easily won. And what happened was there, Vayashav Yoav had just returned. Yoav was his chief of staff. Joining the troops up north, coming back from Yach et Edom, you remember that Edom joined together with Moab and North. He's down south, but he went up north to help them fight. They were on their way to join up with Aram to help them in battle. Yoav went and preempted their joining them and managed to destroy the troops of Edom down in Gei Melach in the Salty Valley. You know where that is? Near Yam HaMelach. 12,000. I am not going to go into the disputes that occur among scholars because there are different numbers presented in the books of Shmuel, Melachim, and Divrei HaYamim. The number there one time says 12,000 and one time says 18,000. It is simply resolved. 12,000 of the Edomites were killed. Later on up north, 6,000 of the Aramim were killed. Total is 18,000. They are in the trenches. It's the middle of a battle. Yoav has just come to join him with reinforcements. When David composed the following song, Elohim, Znachtanu, Prastanu, Anasta, Teshuvev lanu. God, you have abandoned us. You've burst into us, invaded us. Anasta, you've been angry. And I told you the play on the word anas can also be tinah. You betrayed us. Teshuvev lanu. And this is a difficult word to some. Here is a complaint, 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 and now a request. So according to Psalm Teshuvev Lanu, does not mean, as Rashi says, please give us some peace, but rather Teshuvev Lanu, or as Hadak says, come back to us in mercy, but rather bring back Tashiv Lanu, because the Aramim took a lot of Israelites captive. Bring them back to us, according to some. Rabbi Shimshon Refael here says, awaken us to do tshuva. And yet others tell us, come back to us. And it is opposite of abandoning us. It looked for a moment like God had left them. The war was not going in their direction. He ashta eretz. You've quaked the earth. In other words, they were throwing lobs. It's as if there was an earthquake going on. Pitsanta. Pitsanta means you split the earth. You know how in an earthquake the earth sometimes splits open? Refash vareha. Please heal her breaks, the places where it's been shattered. Kimata because it is tilting and about to fall. What happened was that this battle up north took lots of casualties, both in among those taken captive and those killed. And David is concerned. This looks like it's all going to fall. You need to understand that if that battle would have been lost, the land would have been lost, because now they've been joined by all of these other nations, and it would have been an attack from the north, from the west, from the south, from the east. Hir'eta amcha kasha. You showed your nation such hard things. Hishkitenu yain tarela. You've made us drink poisonous wine. Natata liyirecha nes lehitnoses mipnei koshet sela. And now comes the turnaround. And apparently you did all of this. You brought us to the breaking point in order to give your those who fear you nes. And the question is, what is a nes? Lehitnoses. Now, normally the word nes means you've given us a miracle, right? It comes here, you see there is a dagesh in the nun. Lanus can be to flee. Lanus can come from the word nisayon. You've given us a hard test, a terrible trial. A trial, however, which I believe is in order lehitnoses, to bring us up. Because another word for the word nes means a flag, something that will rise up and shine. You brought us to this breaking point, but in order to elevate us. And to elevate us, mipnei koshet sela. Very difficult, because this word does not appear elsewhere. And in Aramaic, koshet means emes. Kushta, it means the truth. And therefore, Mitzudat David says, in order to prove, because of your truth, because of your truthfulness to us. And Rashi says that the play here is on the word Aramaic, which means truth, but it also in Hebrew, lekashet, means to decorate, adorn your midot, so that we will see that you are really there. And why are you going to do this? You put this through this moment, a hard moment, a terrible test. Leman yechel tzun yedidecha, hoshia yemincha ve'aneinu. Now you all know this from the end of Shmoneh Esrei. Lechalet is to rescue, but it means to take somebody out of a tight space. In Hebrew, the word for troubles is tzuras, tzarot. The word tzar means narrow. The opposite of narrow is Rachav. If you can't breathe, if you're being suffocated, or if you can expand your lungs, if you are put in a very tight space and you're being crushed, that's tzulas. Matzor is a siege, because they go and put a tight band around you, letting nothing in, nothing out. That's tzarot. Free, rescue. Yedidecha. Now please notice that beautiful word, yedidecha. In modern Hebrew, sadly, people use the word to indicate friend. And if you want to say that he's not my boyfriend, he's just a friend, you say, well, yedid u lo chaver. It's kind of ironic, because the word yedidim, yedidecha, comes from the word David, which means beloved. Ani ledodi, Vedodi li. And therefore, the word means ahuv ve'ohev. See that double language? Like galgal, galgal, right? There's words in Hebrew that are double. And it means somebody whom I love and loves me. So to dare call Am Yisrael, we are your beloved who love you. Earlier he called us who fear you. And now he says, we are your Yedidim. So that you will save your Yedidim. Hoshia Yemincha. Have your right hand. Save us and answer me. Answer us, answer me. Because David is writing this for his people. But he's also writing this for himself. Because it's lelamed. It's to teach everybody to daven when he's in trouble. Please, God, save those who you love and love you, who remain faithful to you, even if we're not perfect. And save them with your right hand, the Aneni. And I will share a small Hasidic vote with the word Yemincha. You will see that he frequently uses the word the right hand, right? Yemincha osachail, why? Can Chazal tell us, in another place in Tehillim, it tells us that he held up the heavens with his right hand while he established the earth with the left. In the left hand, there is death. In the right hand, there's no death in heaven. So when I ask, have your right hand, it means save me from death. Because the right hand holds up eternity. The left hand is the temporal world. You will also remember that we speak about Smol Docha Yemin Mekarevet. That the way we educate children is we push away with the left hand, we hug with the right hand. Sometimes you got to tell your child no, and sometimes you just got to show them love just because. And you got to do both. You got to have both hands. When I ask the right hand, I'm asking for the hand of love. This you've already showed me, your left hand. The test you're letting us fall is the left hand. I'm asking your right hand to join us. Elohim diber bekotcho. God spoke in his holy place. Where did God speak? Some say he spoke by virtue of his actions. But others say, no, no, no. And I have here a footnote for you. Please next notice where God spoke. Hashem Amar in the book of Shmuel. Beyad David Avdi Oshia et Ami Yisrael. Through the hand of David, my servant, I will save Am Yisrael. Miyad Plishtim, from the hand of the Philistines. Umiyad Kol Oyvehem, and from the hand of all of their enemies. Ah, you've already declared, God. You made that promise. You told me that that would be the case. And now he's quoting what God is. Eloza, I will rejoice. I will dance. Achalka Shrem, I will distribute, divide Shrem. Now the word Shrem is a double entendre. It's the name of a place. Shrem was land that Yaakov bought and then abandoned after the rape of Dinah. Achalka Shechem, I will divide Shechem amongst the tribes because it had not yet been conquered. Ve'emek Sukkot Amaded. Amaded means I measure. Like you take a measure when you send surveyors. Where is Emek Sukkot? We don't know it. You'll soon see. Li Gilad. Gilad is mine. Ve'li Menashe. Ve'Ephraim. Ma'oz Roshi, just like his Ephraim is on the western bank, so is Menashe on the eastern and the western bank, and all of it is, God declares, is mine. It is Ma'oz Roshi. It is the fortress of the one that comes at the head. Why the head? Because Ephraim were the ones that marched first in the war. Yehuda, Mechokeki, and a mechokek is one of two things. It is either a scepter or it is a lawgiver, a legislator. from the days of Yaakov in the blessings, he was going to become the king, the one that is in charge of executing God's laws. So God is declaring, this land is all mine, and I will divide it and give it to who I see fit. But I'll go further. Moab, originally we were not supposed to attack Moab, but Moab joined up together with Bilam. You remember that? Moab, Sir Hachatzi, it's my wash basin. It's where I wash my dirty clothes. It's a denigrating term. I'll do with it what I want. Al Edom, and Edom, which Hashem told us when we came up from Egypt, to circle around Edom and not, God forbid, provoke them. Al Edom, Ashlich Mali, I'll throw my shoe. Do you remember when they took down the statue of Saddam Hussein and they all threw their shoes at it? Amongst the Middle Eastern people, the greatest insult is to take your shoe and throw at it, because the shoe has been in the streets walking around the manure of animals. It's filled with filth. Ale Peleshet, over Peleshet, which is Philistine. Itro I'ai, hard, hard word. So let's play with it. Some say that it comes from the word Rea. And Rea means friend. And it means you will befriend Peleshet. The Philistines will join up with us. They will become vassals. And perhaps some of them convert. If it comes instead from the word Resh Ayin Ayin, you see the way it's spelled here? Then it would mean to shatter. And that's the root of the word Ra. Ale Peleshet, over Peleshet, you will shatter. Others say it comes from the word Trua. Over Peleshet, you will trumpet in celebration and triumph. You will do that. And please notice, no longer does he say, I will do it, you will do it. So here God declares, this is mine, this is mine, I will do with it what I want, this is my wash basin, I will throw my shoe on them. Obviously God doesn't have a shoe. As for Peleshet, you will do it. You will win them over. He's giving us this task. Ah, that was God's pledge. God's pledge is that we would take over this land. It's all ours. And the nations that he previously told us not to provoke, he would now allow us to conquer and make them our vassals. They need to pay us taxes, and they need to, if they want any citizenship, assume the 7 mitzvot of Bnei Noach, the 7 Noahide laws. And that's what they did, actually, the Edomites. Rashi argues that the word comes from Manul, lock. You will break the lock. Break the lock of Peleshet. So much for that. No, but you see that it's very hard. This word, it doesn't appear elsewhere. Mi yovilenu ir matzo. Who will lead us? Who will take us to the city that is besieged? Which cities are we talking about? Aram Tzova. Who can lead us there so we can besiege this city? Mi nachani ad Edom, comes the answer on the other side. Who led me all the way to Edom? And the answer is, because these are rhetorical questions. Who will lead us further on to take those cities and besiege them and then finally conquer them? The same one that led me all the way to Edom. Who do you suppose answered this? Almost like the answer of Yoav. Halo ata Elokim. Ah, after all, it was you, God. You, God, you will lead me. You led me. But you've abandoned us. Velo teitze Elokim betzivoteinu. And you won't go out with us? Among our troops, God? Of course you will. Havalanu Ezrat Mitzar. Come give us helped from the enemy. Tzar, from our troubles. And why am I asking you this? Vishav Chuat Adam. For I've come to the conclusion that in vain I can seek salvation from another person. I got nobody else to rely on. Nobody will come to our aid. We're on our own. God, you gotta join us. Be'elokim na'aseh chayil. With God's help, with Him, we can be victorious. And who yavus tzareinu? And He will crush our enemies.